friends, we can all listen to the Sunny Side of Sports.
Great show, bro. This is Sunny Side of Sports.
Right here on the Voice of America.
Voice of America.
Sporty greetings to all our Voice of America listeners. This is VOA's Sunny Young in Washington. Welcome to the February 10th edition of the Sunny Side of Sports. Only a handful of African countries are represented at the Winter Olympics in China, and Kenya is not one of them. The Kenyans were the top-performing African team at last year's Summer Olympics in Japan, where they won 10 medals, 4 gold, 4 silver, and 2 bronze. All of the medals came in athletics. For the Winter Olympics, the Kenyans were hoping to send a men's ice hockey team to China, but the team failed to qualify due to lack of financial support and not having a place to train. Brenda Molina reports from Nairobi, Kenya.
Kenya's ice hockey team, the Ice Lions, hasn't trained on ice for the last 2 years. The players say that's a key reason they're not at the Beijing Winter Olympics representing Kenya. Hassan Ali has been playing ice hockey for almost 7 years now.
My teammates, they kind of feel sad because, like, most of us wanted to be there to represent our country, Kenya.
The Ice Lions have not had access to the region's only ice rink since it was closed in 2020 due to the coronavirus pandemic. The government ordered the suspension of all sporting activities and the closure of entertainment venues. But even before that happened, a lack of financial support made it difficult to train properly.
The facility we are using is commercial, so you have to pay for the facility to train. And most of the athletes at the same time cannot afford to pay for it.
Kenya's National Olympic Organizing Committee, also known as NOC, is responsible for coordinating Kenya's international sporting events. Committee officials admit that a lack of funding has made it difficult for Kenya to participate at these Winter Games. Kenya took part in the 2018 Winter Olympics and had hoped to send 3 individual athletes and the hockey team to this year's event. NOC's Secretary General says the cost of supporting teams at the Winter Olympics is prohibitive for a tropical country like Kenya, but suggested that may change.
We've also engaged our Ministry of Sports, Culture and Heritage, and they have also agreed with that there should be a little bit more focus on the winter sports, so that even if we are not going to be competitive for a podium finish, the fact that Kenya will be represented and that our flag will be flown in such an important international event, that would be good for us.
The ice hockey team is hoping the ice rink will reopen soon so they can resume training and keep their Olympic hopes alive for the 2026 Winter Games. Brenda Molina for VOA News, Nairobi, Kenya.
Hi, guys. I'm Ferdinand Omanyala, the fastest man in Africa, African 100-meter record holder. And now you're listening to Sunny Side of Sports on the Voice of America.
Nigeria is making its Olympic debut in cross-country skiing at the Winter Games in Beijing, China. Samuel Ikpefon is representing Africa's most populous country. Samuel also has French citizenship. On Monday, he took to Instagram wearing a green headscarf with Nigeria's green and white flag on the front. The 29-year-old skier says, and I quote, "With the food or the music, I've always been immersed in the Nigerian culture." Now, Ikpefon grew up in the French Alps, and he's a former French youth sprint champion. He says skiing for Nigeria helps make a stronger connection to his father's country. Ikpefon says he hopes to motivate a new crop of Nigerian skiers. Team Nigeria made headlines at the Winter Olympics in South Korea in 2018 when its athletes qualified in skeleton and bobsled. I'm Sunny Young in Washington, and you're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on the Voice of America.
Hello, I'm Carol Castiel. Coming up, a conversation with Congresswoman Elaine Luria
a Democrat from the state of Virginia. We will talk with Luria, who is a member of the Armed Services and Veterans Affairs Committee, as well as the Special Select Committee to investigate the January 6th attack on the U.S. Capitol, about a wide range of domestic and foreign issues facing the nation. That's Press Conference USA this Saturday and Sunday on The Voice of America.
Thanks, Carol. You can follow The Sunny Side of Sports on Facebook and Twitter. My Facebook address is facebook.com/VOA Sunny. And my Twitter handle is @VOA Sunny Sports. What was the social media landscape like during the recent Africa Cup of Nations football tournament in Cameroon? That's the question Iron Mike Mbonye posed to the CEO of Result Sports, Mario Leo.
The social media landscape during AFCON has been absolutely buzzing because the AFCON, with all its stars, with the teams, with the surprise results, with Sierra Leone entering the knockout stage, and that's been really very positive, very impactful, especially for social media where the discussion takes place. Just to give you a couple of highlights, I mean, the Continental Africa Federation, the CAF, they gained alone 2.45 million followers across their social media platform. They announced a partnership with TikTok just at the beginning of the tournament, and TikTok alone gained more than 1.5 million followers. Just incredible numbers from social media community's perspective. Nigeria, who had a superb group stage match, gained more than 90% of their followers added to the community during the group stage, and added more than 200,000 followers on it, with 80,000 on Twitter, 75,000 on Instagram, 26,000 on Facebook for the NFF, for the Nigerian Football Federation, and 20,000 for the national team, for the Super Eagles. So Ivory Coast, for example, they gained 300,000 followers. Algeria, which dropped out of after the group stage, they gained 450,000 followers. So you can see this is just an incredible amount. And Senegal, the newly crowned AFCON winner, gained almost 200,000 followers. From a total number, it doesn't sound huge. But when you believe Senegal started the tournament with 380,000 and finished the tournament now with more than 600,000, you can see that they doubled their social media community. And when we see the scenes of their arrival in Dakar, absolutely incredible.
It is understood that some lowly rated teams or so-called minnows in African football got more followers. How did it happen?
I personally believe that there's no minnows or small teams anymore overall, because obviously football has developed a tremendous amount of technology. We've got video analysts checking out the teams before. And the hosts in Cameroon obviously had a very strict bubble and rules for international guests. So you had to be very compliant, had to be vaccinated, had to be tested negative and anything in order to enter the country. And in order to enter, there were too many obstacles for the majority of fans. And therefore, all nations and all fans from the participating countries obviously stayed at home and followed the match on TV, on radio, on broadcast, but discussed the tournament completely on social media. So the smaller teams gained tremendous amount of following. Cape Verde, for example, they started the tournament with 33,000 followers, gained 30,000 followers, and ended the tournament with doubling the numbers to 63,000 followers. Sierra Leone started the tournament with 18,000 followers and ended the tournament with 45,000 followers, more than doubling their numbers. And I can go on and on with these numbers. Guinea gained 40,000 followers from 200 to 240,000. Burkina Faso gained 30,000 followers from 50 to over 80,000. So obviously the social media channels in such a large tournament are obviously the key connection point, touch point for fans to their stars, to their legends, to their federations who are playing abroad at one of the biggest tournaments in Africa and in the world.
What was the social media followers of some big names in African football? Did it improve or drop?
I can already confirm to you that there's no single event of dropping numbers, even though the teams haven't performed to expectations or the players haven't performed to expectation. Obviously, Senegal finally, after lost the last final, gained themselves and crowned themselves to be the African champion. Have been the star of the tournament there with Sadio Mane, Abdou Diallo, and many, many other players. They gained just tremendous amount of following on social media. So during the 30 days of AFCON, Sadio Mane gained close to 800,000 followers. On Instagram alone. So he was already with 9 million, a very, very strong individual, but now he's at 9.9 million. He's closing down the gap to other global players, global football players above him. Mo Salah, who led the team, who took responsibilities at penalty shootouts, he gained during AFCON almost 1 million followers. And you can see, because obviously their teams in the Premier League wished the players good luck. They sent out good luck messages. They sent congratulation messages after they succeeded to the next round, which obviously kept the players from a media perspective always on a very high. And that's the reason why the social media communities and the social media users get aware of these players. The players become more known, more famous, more recognized. And obviously their pathway to be legends, especially for the Senegalese players who sort of been the first time ever African champion, they have now entered the history books, not only in the traditional way, but also on social media, gained a lot of followers and a lot of following. And I hope that continues, because unlocking the digital potential with AFCON is just the beginning of what's going to happen and how Africa is going to impact the world of sports.
That's Mario Leo, the CEO of Results Sports. And Mario spoke with Iron Mike Mbonye on the telephone from Germany.
My name is Mario Leo. I'm the founder and chief executive of Results Sports. You are listening to The Sunny Side of Sports on The Voice of America. Thank you for having me on the show.
Thank you, Mario.
This is Heather Maxwell, host of Music Time in Africa. Join me every Saturday and Sunday for an hour of awesome African music. Wake up, dance this music. Like to stay on top of new music trends, breakout artists, new releases? Maybe you just love the classic styles and artists of the past. Or simply the sound and feel of a good beat. Whatever your pleasure, you can get it every week right here on Music Time in Africa. So join me on your local FM station, Saturdays and Sundays at 1500 and 2000 UTC.
Thanks, Heather. Now let's go to Southern California, where Super Bowl 56 will be played Sunday. The Los Angeles Rams will host the Cincinnati Bengals at SoFi Stadium in the National Football League's annual championship game. Now, the two respective quarterbacks, Joe Burrow of the Bengals and Matthew Stafford of the Rams, are both getting a lot of media attention this week. The 25-year-old Burrow was selected by the Bengals first overall in the 2020 NFL draft after winning the Heisman Trophy as the best player in college football. After an injury-shortened rookie season with the Bengals, Burrow has come back big in leading the team to the Super Bowl.
It feels great. We worked very hard to be in this position. I wouldn't say it's surprising. I know the kind of guys we have in the locker room, and the coaching staff works really hard to put us in good positions to be successful. guys who go an entire career without ever getting to the Super Bowl. So, you know, when you do get there, you really have to, you know, hunker down and take advantage of those opportunities. And you know, I think we have a team that's capable of doing that. We've had a really good week of practice, and you know, I think we're doing a great job of eliminating the distractions that come with the Super Bowl.
Meanwhile, a change of scenery has paid off big for Rams quarterback Matthew Stafford. The AP's Mark Myers reports from Los Angeles.
Last January, Rams quarterback Matthew Stafford was part of a blockbuster trade that saw him go from Detroit to Los Angeles. Prior to this year, he had never won a playoff game. But now in his 13th NFL season and first in L.A., he's taken his new team all the way to the Super Bowl.
I'm definitely appreciative for the opportunity. Know that they're extremely, you know, few and far between and tough to come by. Something that can only be achieved through a bunch of hard work, a bunch of guys pulling in the same direction.
Stafford, who turned 36 this week, has played outstanding in the Rams' current postseason run. In their three playoff wins, he has thrown for 6 touchdowns and run for 2 more. Mark Myers, Los Angeles.
Thanks, Mark. Dan Friedell will have a feature preview of Super Bowl 56 on Friday's show. Dan tells me there will be some key players on the field Sunday who have Africa connections.
VOA brings you the best in African music on the African beat. African beat showcases the latest and the greatest of contemporary African music, from bobo music to hip life, bongo flavor to soukous, Afrobeat to ndombolo and makossa to kwaito. The African beat on VOA has it all. And it's happening right here, Mondays through Fridays at 0905 and 2005 UTC, right after the international news.
Thanks, David. That's David Vandy, the host of the VOA's African Beat music show. On the basketball beat, Boston Celtics center Enes Kanter-Freedom has become known for his pro-democracy activism during his 11-year NBA career. The 29-year-old Freedom is an outspoken critic of both the Turkish and Chinese governments. Stella Su of the VOA's Mandarin service asked Freedom about the NBA's relationship with China and what the league can do to balance profit with principles.
Well, I mean, that was NBA's goal from day one, to expand itself to the whole world, not just in America. And I obviously, after they drafted Yao Ming, and I believe back in 2008, they opened that door to China. And obviously, it's no lie that the NBA is making billions of dollars every year from China. And I look at the stats that last year, there are more people watched in NBA in China than American population, over 400 million people. So the business side of it is real, and I know, yes, they are, NBA is making lots of money, but again, they need to understand, you know, there are, in a country like that, you know, where there is a genocide happening, and in a country like that, where if you look at the Tibetan people, where there is a pretty much cultural genocide. When you look at Hong Kong, you know, where there is no, you know, them, you know, China has been pressuring them for many years. When you look at them, when you look at a country like that, they are trying to invade Taiwan, and Taiwan is on the news every day because of that. I think NBA needs to be a little careful of what they do, what kind of business they're doing, and also NBA's biggest sponsor is Nike. And every year, Nike is obviously, I mean, now everybody knows, I don't need to even explain it, everybody knows about the sweatshops over there, you know, in Xinjiang, and not just in China, but many other countries. So I believe when Adam Silver, the commissioner, you know, goes out there and says, you know, this is a league that stands, you know, more and bigger than basketball, they need to be a little more careful of what kind of business that they were doing or with who, you know. So I feel like Adam Silver needs to be more careful of what kind of business they're doing with China.
When people search Enes Kanter-Freedom on Chinese search engines, there's no results showing as if you do not exist. Mm-hmm. And on some Chinese websites, if people want to search Celtics player statistics, mm-hmm. you don't have a name on it. You are listed as number 13. On some websites, they even takes your statistics down. What is your response to that?
Well, I'm actually kind of used to this from Turkey. You know, in Turkey, they ban my Twitter account. They censored all my basketball games in the whole country. And they censored my name because they're scared. They know that I'm exposing them. And now when I saw that, you know, the Chinese government doing the same thing, it actually gave me an extra motivation because I was like, well, whatever I'm doing is right. Whatever I'm doing is really scaring them. So that's why they are doing what they're doing right now. You know, they ban my name. They actually ban all the Celtics games in a whole country. And that is unacceptable. And that is, it's a shame. And it's, but at the same time, it's funny. Well, I think one more time, they show the whole world that they are a dictatorship and they do not care about freedom of speech or freedom of press, you know, and it's a shame.
You also mentioned that you would like to have a free conversation with Peng Shuai. Mm-hmm. How do you see Peng Shuai's case and the mere phone calls she had with the IOC and photos released?
First of all, I want to talk about the International Olympic Committee. They are corrupt and they sleep in the same bed with China. So whatever they're saying, do not believe them. Whatever International Olympic Committee is saying, do not believe them because they are pretty much a puppet of the Communist Party. You know, obviously, she disappeared. And then a while later, she appeared again. While we know she's alive, we still don't know if she's free. Free to speak, free to travel, and Chinese government doing everything they can to control the narrative about her, you know, because, and I think that what happened to her showed the world one more time about what we should do about our athletes, to if we should send them to Winter Olympics or not. Because whenever I have a conversation with these Olympic athletes, I am always trying to bring her in a conversation. I was like, listen, look what they did to their own tennis player. Are you really going to feel safe going to China? And they think about it. They are like, yeah, what they do to their own tennis player was messed up. I don't believe she's free, you know? And I think everything that, you know, she appeared and she had a conversation with IOC and she had a, she put, I believe, statement out there. I believe it's all Chinese Communist Party's propaganda. And I hope one day that she will be free to speak. And then the world can see one more time what the Chinese Communist Party is all about.
That's Boston Celtics center Enes Kanter-Freedom. And he spoke with Stella Su of the VOA's Mandarin service in Boston, Massachusetts. In NBA action Wednesday night, the Utah Jazz snapped the 9-game winning streak of the Golden State Warriors. The AP's Dave Ferry has that story, as well as details of victories by the Chicago Bulls and the Cleveland Cavaliers.
The Warriors' 9-game winning streak has ended with a blowout loss to the Jazz, 111-85. Bojan Bogdanovic dropped in 23 points, and Donovan Mitchell just missed a triple-double. Mitchell finished with 14 points, 10 rebounds, and 8 assists in a bid for Utah's first triple-double in 14 years. Hassan Whiteside had 9 points, 17 rebounds, and 7 blocks as the Jazz nearly held the Warriors to their lowest shooting percentage this season. Jordan Poole led Golden State with 18 points, and Stephen Curry had just 16 in the Warriors' most lopsided loss of the season. DeMar DeRozan dropped in 36 points, and Zach LaVine had 27 as the Bulls dealt the Hornets their sixth straight loss, 121-109. DeRozan has averaged 33 points over his last 11 games.
Just going out there playing, you know, understanding the moment, you know, just trying to finish this thing off going into the break. understanding how critical these games are.
Nikola Vucevic added 18 points, 15 rebounds, and 8 assists to help Chicago get within one game of the Eastern Conference leading Heat. The Bulls shot 56% from the field, including 48.5% from three-point range. LaMelo Ball had 33 points and 9 rebounds for Charlotte, which made just 13 of 43 three-pointers and is shooting 27.6% from downtown during the skid. Darius Garland scored 27 points in his return from a back injury, helping the Cavaliers top the Spurs 105-92. Garland missed the past four games with a sore lower back. He made 12 of 15 shots and finished with 6 assists and 5 rebounds. San Antonio trimmed a 23-point deficit to 7 in the fourth quarter before Garland hit a jumper and Caris LeVert fed Jared Allen for a layup. LeVert had 11 points in his Cavs debut.
It's like your first day at school. You're a new kid. So it was fun for me, but I'm glad it's behind me now. You know what I mean? A lot of nerves and jitters.
Rookie Evan Mobley had 18 points and 12 rebounds, while Allen had 15 points and 14 boards. I'm Dave Ferry.
Sporty greetings. This is Masai Ujiri, the president of Toronto Raptors Basketball, president of Giants of Africa Foundation. You are listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on the Voice of America.
Masai Ujiri's Toronto Raptors spread their wings and soared to their 7th consecutive victory Wednesday night. The Raptors scored a 117-98 road victory against the Oklahoma City Thunder. And let's give another Sunny Side of Sports salute to Pascal Siakam, the Cameroonian star for the Raptors. He had 27 points and 16 rebounds for Toronto, which improved its record to 30 wins and 23 losses. Oklahoma City, meanwhile, is having a losing season. It was the 37th loss for the Thunder, who have 17 wins.
This is the Voice of America. Washington, D.C.
Hi, this is Larry London, the host of VOA's Border Crossings, where we feature music and interviews along with your favorite artists from around the world. Tune in and interact live with us here in Washington, D.C.
Hello, Shirin.
Hello, Larry. How are you?
Good. How are you tonight?
Border Crossings comes to you Monday through Friday at 1500 UTC GMT.
Thanks, Larry. That's Larry London, a man who's always ready to cross musical borders. I'm Sonny Young in Washington, and you're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on The Voice of America.
Yeah, and the expectations. Yeah, we have we have the chance to win two trophies in this calendar of February, and we are looking up to it. And as normal, it will not be easy. It will not be easy task. But if you want to be number one, yes, you have to beat the best.
That's Chelsea defender Antonio Rudiger, whose team beat Saudi Arabia's Al Hilal on Wednesday 1-0 to advance to the final at the FIFA Club World Cup football tournament in Abu Dhabi in the United Arab Emirates. Belgian star Romelu Lukaku fired home from close range in the 32nd minute for the game's only goal. European champion Chelsea will play the Brazilian side Palmeiras for the FIFA Club World Cup trophy on Saturday in Abu Dhabi. Palmeiras defeated African champion Al Ahly of Egypt 2-0 in the semifinals. Now, the Blues of Chelsea won their match Wednesday without head coach Thomas Tuchel, who tested positive for COVID-19. Chelsea is currently in third place in the English Premier League, 13 points behind front-running Manchester City, which beat Brentford Wednesday 2-0. Algerian star Riyad Mahrez and the Belgian Kevin De Bruyne had the goals for Man City, which looks to be well on its way to a successful defense of its Premier League title. And that wraps up the February 10th edition of the show. Thank you for tuning in. I'm VOA's Sonny Young in Washington, and that's the Sunny Side of Sports.